The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's TalkBack for this Thursday, June 25th. I am Peter Christian. That is Mr. Nick Christensen over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And joining us in the studio this morning, one of our regular guests, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. Hey, Bob, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Peter, Nick. Good morning, Montana.
It is good to have you back. And we have a special guest waiting on the phone. I'm going to probably embarrass the heck out of him by reading his bio. Jonathan Granoff is on the phone with us. He's an American lawyer, screenwriter, and lecturer, widely known as president of the Global Security Institute. Granoff is a senior advisor of the American Bar Association's Committee on Arms Control and National Security and has served as vice president of the NGO Committee on Disarmament at the United Nations. He serves on numerous governing and advisory boards, including the Lawyers Committee on Nuclear Policy, the Lawyers Alliance for World Security, the Jane Goodall Institute, the Bipartisan Security Group, and the Middle Powers Initiative. He was appointed the permanent observer of the International Anti-Corruption Academy for the United Nations in December of 2022. And that's just a little bit of his bio. So, Bob, it's all yours.
So, welcome back to Montana, Jonathan. And as I'm listening to Peter, there's little points in there of what we're going to be discussing today. But I'd like to start because you've been around the block. You've been around the world. You've seen a lot. You've had opportunities to meet with people, different positions. So let's introduce you a little bit to our audience. So give us some of this background and some of these experiences that we're going to be then broadening out today in our conversation.
Well, you know, one of the things I want to highlight is my objection to personality politics. So talking about my personal background is almost a little bit uncomfortable because I consider myself a person of the moment, and we're in serious times in which grown-ups have to look at the serious issues. But I come from a very interesting background. My mother was the singer Kitty Callan. People might have heard songs that she sang in the 1940s like Kiss Me Once, Kiss Me Twice, Kiss Me Once Again, that iconic song with all the soldiers came back from World War II. That was my mother, Bessemer Mucho.
Wow.
And then she was sort of the top, top pop singer, female pop singer in the 1950s. So there was a lot of show business. And my dad was very proud of his military service in World War II. And one of the things that he told me about was how he was stationed at Hyde Park in the first radar deployment, the first sort of high-tech military deployment of the United States during the war. My dad was a publicist for a period of time. He was very successful in making people famous. And so these are people that were, around our house, people whose homes I lived at, actually, for, extended periods of time, for months at a time. Frank Sinatra, Doris Day, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. The sort of the icons that helped create our much of our popular culture. And that was the home life that I grew up in. I grew up in the suburbs of New York. I went to a small private school. Other people that went to the school would include George Shultz, former Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. And then I got a law degree from Rutgers University Law School. Received the Distinguished Alumni Award from them, which meant a lot to me because it's very competitive.
You bet, Jonathan.
Very active,
Jonathan. Just real quick, we're up against a break, and just a hard break here, just a few seconds, and so we're going to come right back. We'd like to continue because this is a fascinating bio we're listening to with Jonathan Granoff. And our phone number is 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. The Montana World Affairs Council on the radio will continue right after this. TalkBack is sponsored.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. More clouds and sun Thursday, along with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. It looks like a warm day still, with highs in the low 80s and a chance of rain around 50%, down to 40% in the evening. The main cold front arrives Friday, with temperatures sliding back to 70, then into the 60s, even the upper 50s by Sunday. Rain and thunderstorms Friday, with more showers and possible thunderstorms Saturday. Heavy rain over Glacier through the weekend, and it looks like clouds and rain for Marathon Sunday.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. Montana World Affairs Council on the radio continues. Bob Seidenschwartz, and our special guest on the phone is Jonathan Granoff. So let's continue, Bob, please.
Yeah, Jonathan, you clearly, you're growing up in your background, the people you were exposed to may not be what the average person had in their life. But at the same time, whatever anybody else was doing, we're all drawing experiences from those moments and those times, and we're being shaped by this. So throughout your lifetime, you've come to a place of certain values, certain viewpoints on the world, certain viewpoints on institutions. Share with us a little bit of how that has shaped you to the present time, and that then leads us into the conversation about what comes next.
Sure. I was always very interested in political affairs. And I helped organize high school students to engage in electoral politics in northern New Jersey. And I from that experience, I felt it was very important to focus on education. So when I became a lawyer, I did a project with the National Park Service for the 200th anniversary of the Constitution, interviewing Supreme Court justices and senators and congresspeople who gathered in Philadelphia at Independence Hall for the celebrations. And from that, I worked with educational producers and produced a documentary called The Constitution, the document that gave birth to a nation, which millions of American high school students saw when we used to teach civics in our schools, which I urge that we reinstitute that. And the whole purpose of that was empowerment, that the Constitution, our Constitution, is a brilliant living document, and its life and its vitality don't come from Washington, D.C. They come from the people, and they come from the actual engagement of the people in policy, not from the top down, but from the people. And that was very formative. Another thing that happened from that experience was that I was interning in Washington before I went to college, and I had lunch with four or five other interns with the then senator from New York State, Robert Kennedy, and he told us about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and there were some things that are just blazing in my memory to this day. He talked about how close we came to ending God's beautiful creation, how close we came to having a full-out nuclear exchange. And we were saved, he said, largely by good luck and by patience and some wisdom and sobriety. And he said at the end of the conversation with us that he believes, and I believe this too, that nuclear weapons are the practical and moral litmus test of modernity. If we get every other issue right and don't get that right, it won't matter. So that stayed with me. And when I became an attorney, I joined with a bipartisan group called Lawyers Alliance for World Security. And it was very, very high-level experts from Washington and a bunch of very passionate young lawyers like myself. And one of the projects that we did was we brought lawyers from the then Soviet Union to the United States. And we brought them to see bankruptcy court. Now, their image of capitalism was such that the idea that a debtor could gain refuge in the state from the rapaciousness and overreach of capital and banks was astonishing to them. It was astonishing to them when they saw jury trials where normal citizens without legal backgrounds were part of the administration of justice, and that our trials were open to the public. They were amazed when they met U.S. attorneys who made it clear, and this is something I feel very strongly about that we're missing, very clear that the Justice Department of the United States is nonpartisan. It has to be independent. And that they kept asking, but you were appointed by political leaders of one party. Will you prosecute them? And every single, U.S. attorney said, of course we do, and gave examples of it. The other thing that astonished them was there was a federal judge in Philadelphia holding the city of Philadelphia in contempt of court for putting eight men in prison cells that had been designed for only four, and she considered that unconstitutional, a violation of the prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment. She was fining the city of Philadelphia $1 million a day for this impropriety. And these lawyers from the authoritarian regime of the Soviet Union couldn't imagine a judge holding the state to the rule of law, because they had no idea that the rule of law means the state and the agents of the state, presidents, senators, everybody, prison officials, everybody is subject to the rule of law. And she said, and she had a very strong sort of, she's a brilliant, brilliant jurist. But she talked like this. She said, they asked her, how can you do this? She said, I'm the judge. I'm the judge. And I judge that it's cruel and unusual to treat people that way. And they're not going to get away with it on my watch. And that really amazed them. And those lawyers became advocates for the much of the change that took place and ending the Soviet Union. And we sent lawyers from the United States over there, and people came back and reported, that the people of Russia are people, that, with families. They're not all the political leadership of the country. It's a country with human beings. And that humanizing element of politics remains with me to this day, that what I believe to be the most important thing. I got to work closely with former Secretary of State George Shultz in a group that was advocating interfaith dialogue and responsible nuclear stewardship, nonproliferation, and disarmament. And because George Shultz was a very close to Ronald Reagan and his vision of a better world.
Jonathan, I want you to be able to finish this. We're running out of time in this segment, but we'll stop right there and we'll continue when we come back. 406-721-1290 is our number. The Montana World Affairs Council on the radio continues with Bob Seidenschwartz and his guest, Jonathan Granoff, which will continue right after this.
Don't risk losing.
My doctor said I could use something called a biosimilar. Then she told me what it is.
A biosimilar is a type of biologic medication. Just like brand name drugs have generic versions, original biologics can have biosimilars.
So I asked what the benefits are and if they work the same.
Biosimilars have the same safety, effectiveness, and quality as the original biologic. They also offer more medication options at potentially more competitive prices.
My doctor said I could learn more at fda.gov/biosimilars.
If your community is affected by wildfires, contractors may approach you with incredible promises to help you recover. However, they may be dishonest individuals hoping to take advantage of your situation. Don't be a victim. If you suspect fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. Our phone numbers, by the way, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And it's the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with his special guest, Jonathan Granoff. So let's continue our conversation.
Yeah,
please.
Jonathan, please continue with George Shultz.
Well, yeah, so I had an extensive experience with George Shultz and Mikhail Gorbachev, who was one of the founders of the Global Security Institute, where I serve as the president. And when they had the 20th anniversary of the Geneva Summit, in which they agreed, Gorbachev and President Reagan agreed that a nuclear war can never be won and must therefore never be fought, and put in motion the end of the Cold War. There were the principals of that gathering, the then foreign minister of the Soviet Union, Russia, and its president, Gorbachev, and the principals who were with President Reagan. And one of the themes that George Shultz emphasized about that period was very simple. Trust is the currency of the realm. And we ended the Cold War, in his opinion, and Gorbachev's as well, largely because trust was built between human beings. And that's one of the most important takeaways that I've learned in working with many world leaders, is that it really comes down to the human element. And of course, Reagan was emphatic: trust but verify. Make sure that the agreements that take place amongst nations are not only based on the personal relationships of the people that create the change, but it gets institutionalized in monitoring, accounting, and holding the institutions to the task. So institutions become very important, and the institutions have to have legal basis, verifiability, and people have to respect those. And that, of course, is one of the great values of what America is about. That's something I learned in working on this documentary on the Constitution, which was that our Constitution was largely informed by objecting to the synthesis of power in the king or in one person, and embodying institutional, what would be considered from a corporate point of view, inefficiencies, checks and balances. States check the federal government. The federal government and the states have a tension between them. The judiciary has to have oversight, independence from the legislative and the executive. And, of course, the legislative has the power of the purse and the power of oversight in giving advice and consent to important positions. So the legislative has a tension and should have a tension with the executive. You don't run a corporation and a business that way. A business has a leader. He says that everybody has to step in line. That's what monarchies are like. Our Constitution was created by people who understood that the institutions have to create room for diversity and debate and different points of view. And that is, in my opinion, one of the great strengths of our nation. And meeting with people who were involved in world affairs in which those issues are core, that's something that I feel privileged that I've had that experience. And especially being up close to people who, you know, were involved in major historical change and humanized it, you know, that these are just human beings. Right now, I'm profoundly concerned that any one of the nine men of countries with nuclear arms could end the human miracle. They could end love on the planet Earth. They could end the diversity of species, the wondrous natural world we live in, and they could end humanity. And I don't think any nine people should have that kind of power over God's creation. When you were reading my bio, I did have a correction. I'm presently not, but I did have the diplomatic posting in the General Assembly of the United Nations on the anti-corruption file.
Wow.
There's a treaty on anti-corruption, and that has observer status, like the Vatican, in the General Assembly, and I was the diplomat with that posting. So I was very informed by the enormous amount of resources that are stripped from the productive economies of the world and our country from tax evasion, tax avoidance, and internationally gun running, human trafficking, drug running, and all of these corrupt activities, and the need for international legal regimes to stop it, because the bad guys are operating globally. And the good guys, the people who are running nations, we'll call them all the good guys, are less coordinated than the bad guys. And so we've got to get back to a much more realistic approach to getting that $2 to $4 trillion that is stolen from the productive economies of the world. And that goes, you know, to the lives of people. So I spent decades, you know, practicing law in Philadelphia, but I always devoted a great amount of time to what I considered to be the convergence of global affairs with local issues.
All right. And with that, Jonathan, we're going to take a quick break. Come right back. The phone lines are open, by the way, 406-721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. We'll continue with Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network right after this.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. More clouds and sun Thursday, along with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. It looks like a warm day still, with highs in the low 80s and a chance of rain around 50% down to 40% in the evening. The main cold front arrives Friday, with temperatures sliding back to 70, then into the 60s, even the upper 50s by Sunday. Rain and thunderstorms Friday, with more showers and possible thunderstorms Saturday. Heavy rain over Glacier through the weekend, and it looks like clouds and rain for Marathon Sunday.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. Our number 406-721-1290. And of course, it's Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us, with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to talk with his guest, Jonathan Granoff, president of the Global Security Institute. Gentlemen, let's continue, please.
Yeah, Jonathan, to all of our listeners across the state, Montana is a big ag state. Ranching, ag, it has just been a part of the history, the culture. Recently, Western Ag came out with a report. Nick, Peter, you may be familiar with this. And they were asking and getting surveys from different ag people across our state. I also believe Wyoming, too, may have been included. Roughly about 70% of our agricultural people said they cannot afford the cost of fertilizer. Now, they took a blow when we had the tariffs put in place.
Right.
That was disruptive. That caused uncertainty. Anybody who's been in that industry, and I'd love to hear from some of these folks, year to year is precarious to begin with. Often leverage is involved. Things work out great. You got a great crop and you got money in the bank. But on top of the tariffs, now we had the disruption in the Gulf, which I think a lot of people now know a significant part of the fertilizer that we use globally comes out of that region. That is not something that is going to be easily reconstituted.
Because it's petroleum-based.
Well, you're talking about everything from urea to phosphate. These are building blocks for nitrogen, which are building blocks for what we use in fertilizer to get the yields.
Right.
So when we start thinking about then disruptions from climate events, we start thinking about our own man-made disruptions. When we look at the totality of this, you and I as consumers may start to be, and already have seen the effect, look into 2027, when I believe you'll probably see even more so the cost of food going up and the effect on these farmers and ranchers. So when we start to really get down and personalize these issues that we all deal with, it's right here in our own backyard. So,
and at our kitchen table.
And at our kitchen table. Right. So when we're talking about institutions, these are institutions that often get a bad name until they're needed. When we're talking about weather events, whether it's caused by X, Y, or Z, the fact is it's an issue. So some thoughts and comments on that, Jonathan.
The fact of wheat prices, fuel costs, export markets, fertilizer, our military families and their stability, decisions relating to the use of public lands, and whether young Montanans and Americans inherit a stable country, all are related to world affairs. That's why the World Affairs Council that you're part of is so important. You know, the United States takes in over $1.3 trillion in international investment because of respect for the rule of law, because of the oversight of our Internal Revenue Service, because of the oversight of our markets with the Securities Exchange Commission, because our foreign policy until very recently was built on building alliances based on trust and the stability of the United States. And that's always been, these aspects of our country have always been nonpartisan because they don't relate to partisanship or personalities. They're not celebrity personality driven. These are maturity, immaturity. These are smart, dumb. And right now, the sort of Washington-centered, personality-driven situation we're in is creating enormous chaos, threatening, crushing tariffs with our most important allies and neighbors. It creates chaos in the markets. It creates chaos, starting wars that are not based on truth, that are just based on whatever it shows up on some news network, creates tremendous instability in the world. The laws that we've created, the treaties that we've created, have done us very well. This last 80 years since the end of World War II, and particularly since the end of the Cold War, has pulled more people on the planet out of poverty, has created more wealth than ever before in human history. And all of that is based on the institutions that we take for granted.
You bet.
And we take for granted that you can fly an airplane,
right,
and have the same protocol anywhere in the world.
We are 10 seconds away from a break, and we're going to pick it right up when we come back. 406-721-1290 is our number. It's the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio here on TalkBack.
Thirsty.
Hey, we are back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. And, of course, it's the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio this morning. And we do have callers who are interested in joining the conversation with Jonathan Granoff. And I believe David is up first. Dave, is it Dave? Dave, good morning, sir. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. You know, our government policy towards Cuba right now, it appears is that we want to starve the people of Cuba to death and trying to change their government. And, you know, the last person to starve to death would be the leader of Cuba. So in my view, instead of trying to use our military force to starve the people into changing their government, it would be a better policy if we opened up people to come from Cuba into this country and see what kind of country it is as an example. And they would have a better view of our country and a worse view of their own country. And that might very well change their government. And I'm just curious what you think about that.
Dave, I'm going to let Jonathan answer this, but I got to jump in because
Thanks.
There's a perfect example right now taking place across the United States of getting that kind of showcase. And it is, Peter, the World Cup.
Right.
People are coming from all over the world, and there's story after story about because they have come here.
And they're digging America,
and
man.
They have a perspective that is not always in sync with what they believed it to be and what they've been told on full display. I have long believed if we would have said to Cuba, even with Castro, you know what, we're going to trade with you guys because we're going to bury you with what we do right that you don't. So just my opinion. Thank you for letting me ramble on for a moment.
Jonathan,
here.
Your thoughts, please.
I could not agree more emphatically. The strength of our security depends on our openness and confidence in our institutions. When we break out of treaty regimes, when we break out of using the rule of law in our own domestic institutions and limit the powers of one person, a personality, whether it's Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, when we break out of the checks and balances of our system, we diminish trust in the United States. The intelligence community, any intelligence people will tell you that the greatest assets that we've been able to get over the years are people who are willing to tell on their countries, are usually authoritarian dictatorships, because they believe in our democracy, because they believe we have a better system, a more honest system, a more law-abiding system. And that's the basis of our thriving. That's the basis of protecting our freedoms from the intrusion of businesses that gather all the information about us and personalities that decide that they can make decisions willy-nilly on a whim and create chaos, rather than respecting the multiplicity of points of view, the great diversity of cultures and peoples that make up this fantastic orchestra of America. Now, maybe I'm, you know, sort of prejudiced because I come from the New York metropolitan area, where you can go from one neighborhood to another and see very different cultures and peoples living together and enjoying their diversity and seeing strength in that diversity, seeing strength in the immigrant story of the Statue of Liberty and America standing up for the poor, standing up as a place of haven from oppression. I believe strongly that the best way we could change Cuba from the authoritarian dictatorship that they're living under is for them to see what freedom looks like, to see what the rule of law looks like. Not the rule of men making arbitrary decisions without real engagement and debate, to see what governance that has checks and balances looks like, and to see the wealth that's created in a free society. I totally agree. The best sanitizer is the sunshine of transparency, openness, and honesty. That way we would change Cuba quickly.
I was just looking at this from the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. I mean, you can't not be moved by something like that.
Well, there are people now in positions of power who are very much opposed to that principle.
Right.
And I see Russell Voigt, who is head of the budget, very much against those principles, and is willing to cut back in our budget on almost everything that takes care of that tries to take people out of poverty. And, you know, the things that we take for granted, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, food assistance, the Small Business Administration, preschool development, higher education and education subsidies, child care, and I think more importantly, cutting back by over 50% of the audits of people who make over $10 million a year.
So, Jonathan, we got several callers here that would like to speak to you.
We're
kiss a break?
Yeah, we're about a minute away from a break, but I just want you to know.
Let me just finish this.
Yeah, please do.
Let me just finish this back.
Go ahead.
We lose about $700 billion a year in tax fraud. The part of the Internal Revenue Service that monitors that under the current budget that we're seeing is going to be cut back by 50%. I'd like to see it tripled. I want to see that corruption that takes place by the very wealthy, of our, and super wealthy. We're not talking billionaires. We're talking billionaires. And now we're talking trillionaires. They are not paying their fair share, and they're taking advantage of the hard work that the rest of us do. And I consider that not only that inequity corruption, but the actual oversight of the corruption corrupts.
You bet. And with that, we're up against a break, and couldn't agree more. And we have Perry, Ed, Jeff, and Jeff all waiting to visit with you. So lots of calls coming up, and we appreciate you being with us, Jonathan. So we're going to come right back after this quick break. 406-721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Talk back on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Research 75 years of policy
75 years of opportunity
75 years of freedom.
This is 75 years of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Join us at mda75.org.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Talkback rolls right along. The Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio. And our special guest on the phone is Jonathan Granoff, president of the Global Security Institute. And the phone lines are lighting up, so let's get right to it. Perry from Columbus is first. Perry, go ahead, please.
Good morning. You know, I'd like to speak to Jonathan specifically about some of your whole talk today has been basically a litany of American Bar Association leftist mantra that just covers the gambit from top to bottom of everything that, you know. Let me just pick a couple of them. Yeah, I heard you mention specifically that the Constitution is a living, growing document. Well, I'm sorry to beg to differ with you, sir, but it's a solid piece of writing that is not subject to interpretation by any given judge. And we are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. And let's go to the thing about disarmament, you know, and it's peace for everybody. Since the first Neanderthal sharpened a stick and stuck it in something other than his dinner, there's been evil people, evil nations that want to conquer and destroy other nations. And the only reason that we haven't met that fate yet is because we have people who are free, armed, and determined to defend our way of life. And that the thinly veiled attacks on our current chief executive are just proof that I don't know how you defend the assault on somebody who finally had the bravery and the cojones to go in and shut down the Iranian mullahs, who will, if they ever get a hold of that bomb, they will use it without any hesitation, and the nuclear holocaust that you so dread will be upon us.
Well, Perry, thanks for the call. And Jonathan, please, go ahead. Your thoughts.
Well, let's go. There were so many things that he raised. First, it is the Constitution is a written document that sets up structures. And one of the structures is that judges have to interpret the words to apply to situations. That's what judgment is. And the interpretation of it has to be done according to the circumstances of the time. When the Constitution was written, men without property didn't have full citizenship. Women didn't have full citizenship. People of color didn't have citizenship. Indigenous people didn't have citizenship. That's when it was written. Today, the world is quite different. We wouldn't want to go back to a time when women were become second-class citizens. So the growth of the vision of Thomas Jefferson that all men are created equal has grown to be very inclusive, and that's because the Constitution was brilliant and is a living document. Its structures and its principles include, for example, what's called the Supremacy Clause. The Supremacy Clause evidence the vision of the founding fathers that we would be a nation that would be an example to the world, that we would apply treaties to international affairs. And so treaties that are ratified are the supreme law of the land. And every time we violate a treaty, we're violating our Constitution. So throwing out treaties like the treaty that banned an entire class of weapons that was brought to us by the leadership of two Republican presidents, Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr., that's not American Bar Association leftist tribble. That's core constitutional values. And that treaty, the Intermediate Range Missile Prohibition Treaty, our walking away from that is despicable. Walking away from the Open Skies Treaty that ensured that we could monitor the conduct and verify the activities of adversaries, and that since we're in a free society, people can find out what we do. We lose nothing and we gained everything from that. It was just this idea that the United States can and should go it alone. That was never part of the vision of the founding fathers. And the strengths that we've had have been by building trusting alliances with the rest of the world based on treaty agreements. Before the break, I was talking about how there's so much of the world in which we live that we take for granted. We take for granted that it is through treaties and the law that our intellectual property that our economy is so based on is recognized through the Berne Convention all over the world. So our patents get protected. And that's, of course, the big issue with China, where they don't have the rule of law and they don't protect property rights. They have licenses. As far as the Iran issue is concerned, the Iran deal that we had inspectors there. The 18 of our intelligence reports said that they had stopped their nuclear program. They had actually stopped their nuclear weapons program in 2002. And that we had inspections there, and we could have strengthened them. If you go look and see what I've been writing publicly, I have been writing, not only do we need to strengthen the inspection regime in Iran, but we need to strengthen it globally.
We're going to cut. We're a hard break coming up in seconds. We're going to be right back. Another hour stretches before. We're out of time. We have a hard break, so we'll be right back. Hold on.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, we are statewide right now on the Montana Talks Radio Network, and I'm glad because phone lines are lighting up all over the place, and our special guest, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us, the Montana World Affairs Council, and Jonathan Granoff is president of the Global Security Institute. Nick, did you, please?
It's a new hour, so if you could read Jonathan's bio again really quick, if you have it really quick.
Absolutely. You got it right here.
9 o'clock audience.
You bet. We have much wider audience in the 9 o'clock hour, so let's just repeat this very important information about our guest, Jonathan Granoff, an American lawyer, screenwriter, and lecturer, widely known as president of the Global Security Institute. Granoff's a senior advisor of the American Bar Association's Committee on Arms Control and National Security, and has served as vice president of the NGO Committee on Disarmament at the United Nations, serves on numerous governing and advisory boards, including the Lawyers Committee on Nuclear Policy, the Lawyers Alliance for World Security, the Jane Goodall Institute, the Bipartisan Security Group, and the Middle Powers Initiative. He was appointed the permanent observer of the International Anti-Corruption Academy for the United Nations in December of 2022. We could go on and on, but we run out of time. So,
yeah, so Jonathan, you got a few things you want to close with.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I do. There's just facts are important. You can't have alternate facts. One of the facts is there's a treaty that arose after the Cuban Missile Crisis that the intelligence community of the United States and the Soviet Union said, absent some constraints on the proliferation of nuclear weapons. There'd be dozens of nuclear weapon states by the 1970s. There aren't, because the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which entered into force during the Republican administration of Richard Nixon, guarantees that 186 countries have forsworn nuclear weapons and are subject to International Atomic Energy Agency safeguards. Iran must be subject to a far more intrusive regime of safeguards, something along the lines of the safeguards we have in the Chemical Weapons Convention, which was negotiated under George Bush Sr. That treaty has spot inspections. I have been arguing, and there's an article in Newsweek about this recently, you can look it up there, just Google me, arguing that we need to have the same kind of intrusive inspections for 186 countries that have forsworn nuclear weapons. That comes out of the principle that Ronald Reagan, a Republican president, conservative Republican president, I might add, who was a strong advocate of disarmament, and he set in motion the reduction of the nuclear arsenals to his credit by over 80% from the time of his meetings with the Soviet leadership to this day. He's put in motion the START process, which we have just walked out of. That treaty guarantees 186 countries must be subject to inspections and safeguards. I feel that the intrusive inspections that were imposed on Iran should be universal and prevent the next North Korea from happening. We can't be preventing the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction by running around and bombing people. We have to have ongoing feet on the ground, eyes on the ground, professional accounting and verification that we can rely on. Legal, verifiable, and mature. Not gunboat diplomacy, but actual diplomacy. That has been the strength of the United States. That, because we stand for the rule of law, and the American Bar Association is not some leftist organization. It's the lawyers that are the lawyers that make up the backbone of our industry and our ability to trust our contracts and to trust our courts. That's why America's respected.
All right.
We're the first nation in the world created by the rule of law.
We're gonna come right.
No other nation did that.
We're going to come right back. We have a whole host of folks lined up to visit with you when we come back from the break. Jonathan, we appreciate it. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout. And we have Ed, Jeff, Harry, and Arnie, just to name a few. We'll be right back. So stay with us.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. More clouds and sun Thursday, along with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. It looks like a warm day still, with highs in the low 80s and a chance of rain around 50%, down to 40% in the evening. The main cold front arrives Friday with temperatures sliding back to 70, then into the 60s, even the upper 50s by Sunday. Rain and thunderstorms Friday with more showers and possible thunderstorms Saturday. Heavy rain over Glacier through the weekend, and it looks like clouds and rain for Marathon Sunday.
Thanks so much for joining us on this Thursday edition of Talk Back. A very active Montana World Affairs Council on the radio episode with our special guest, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio. Our special guest, Jonathan Granoff, who is president of Global Security Institute. Now, before we start jumping into calls, Jonathan, were there any reactions you wanted to make real quickly?
I just wanted to point out that there are 186 countries under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which was entered into force during the Republican administration of Richard Nixon, that have forsworn nuclear weapons. And the kind of inspections that we have under the very effective Chemical Weapons Convention, spot inspections, intrusive verification processes, mature accountability, we need to have that not just with Iran, but with all 186 countries that have forsworn nuclear weapons to ensure that we don't have another North Korea.
We can't obtain that
by becoming the policeman of the world.
All right.
We can obtain that by strengthening the international rule of law. Now, people who say that's some kind of leftist American Bar Association tribble, Well, I just point out that the lawyers of all of our major corporations, our military-industrial complex, our entire system is based on the hundreds of thousands of lawyers, because we are the first nation in the world created as an identity based on a legal instrument. That was never done before, and we never had, no other nation was created by people putting checks and balances on authority, on their own power.
All right, Jonathan.
Some degree of humility and maturity. That's America.
Let's get right back to the phones. Folks have been waiting quite a while. Ed, thank you for holding, sir. Go ahead. You're on with Jonathan Granoff. Go ahead, please.
Sure enough. Earlier you were talking about shutting off the Strait of Hormuz affecting the amount of fertilizer that, you know, that comes out of there. There's something else that is kind of interesting that is shut off also, and that is helium. Helium, I'm not talking about party balloons here, I'm talking about industrial and medical uses of it, but it's dissolved in natural gas, and that varies around the world. Qatar has a lot. It's a major supplier of helium. Where is this used? It's used in MRIs. Whenever you want a big, powerful magnetic field that's going to be lasting, you choose a superconducting magnet at this alloy at low temperatures, just a couple degrees above absolute zero with liquid helium. This conducts electricity with zero resistance. You can get it going in the electromagnet, disconnect the power supply, and bingo, you got a magnet for as long as you keep it cold. And
Ed, what's your question for Jonathan? The phone lines are lying up. Let's go ahead, please.
Have you heard of a helium shortage that's going to affect, that could affect MRIs and other scientific instruments that have magnets?
Ed, I'll answer that very quickly because we got a lot of callers waiting here. The answer is yes. Natural gas is the feedstock. If you have natural gas not being supplied into the marketplace or shortages of, then you start to see the effects of what we described earlier. So that's going to have a downstream effect upon everything, medically, food-wise, you name it. So, Ed, thank you very much. Great call.
You bet. And Jeff is standing by. Jeff, thanks for holding. You're on with Jonathan Granoff. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Jess. Good morning, Montana. I've got 4 points here that I want to highlight. First of all, Jonathan, you said that you talked rightfully about the rights of minorities, of women, of blacks, of Indians. Those were done by legislatures. Those were not done by judges, either by law or by amendments to the Constitution. Judges don't have the right to make law. They just have the right to interpret law. So when those rights were recognized, it was by legislatures, not by judges. Second of all, I spent 28 years in the intel community, and it has been weaponized. And I could give a whole bunch of reasons why. I just want to know that there's something called the United States Signals Intelligence Directive, the USID. USID 18 prohibits what the FISA court did to the President Trump in his last administration. That was unconscionable. Third, the Open Skies Treaty. I was involved in that. Russia abrogated that. We didn't. They're the ones who closed down their skies. So we said, well, if you're closing yours down, then we're not going to reciprocate. And then fourth of all, you've made allusion to the international rule of law. There is no rule of law that applies internationally. There's an international court of justice, but it's a joke. The United States laws, for example, freedom of speech, I don't know of any other country besides the United States that recognizes it. Britain doesn't. None of the EU countries do. So there is everything you've talked about is a leftist trope that is not substantiated by the facts.
All right, and I will tell you, Jonathan, we have about a minute and a half for you to answer that, then we'll take
a
break.
I can't go through all four, so I'll just go through the first one that says that judges don't, you know, are not engaged in helping to make the law and interpreting the Constitution. He's absolutely right. I mean, laws are made by the legislative branch, and judges are duty-bound to apply that, but it's interpreting what would be due process and equal protection under the 14th Amendment, a landmark decision that said that separating black people from white people, the apartheid nature of the Jim Crow regime that we had until the civil rights changes of the 1960s, which led to the legislative changes. But there was a landmark decision called Brown versus the Board of Education. And that said that separating people based on race in the schools was a violation of equal protection and due process. Before that time, the law was in the books, but it did not become law until a judge said equal protection and due process means this. So, and that standard can change. Certainly the standard of how incarcerated people are treated has dramatically changed and in some instances has improved tremendously. And the privatization of our prison system has degraded that because it's not operating with the same kind of legal oversight.
We are up against a break. We're going to come right back. Harry and Rick are both waiting to visit with you. Our guest, Jonathan Granoff, on the Montana World Affairs Council, which will continue right after this.
State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. Authorities have released the identity of the teen who died last week at a party in the Flathead. According to the Flathead County Sheriff's Office, deputies were called to a home on Jewel Basin Road outside Big Fork around 2:50 in the morning on June 13th, where they found 18-year-old Xander Snake unresponsive. Witnesses at the scene attempted to warm him and transport him to medical care, but he lost signs of life during the trip. Investigators say there were no obvious signs of trauma. The case remains under investigation. Great Falls police have taken a person of interest into custody following an early morning stabbing downtown. The Central Montana High Risk Unit executed a search warrant later yesterday in the 400 block of 10th Street North related to a stabbing incident that occurred off Central Avenue early in the morning. The victim was transported to Benefice Health System for care. The scene has been cleared, but police say they continue to investigate. There's a lot of work ahead if anti-smoking advocates are going to convince lawmakers to raise Montana's tobacco tax next year, especially given that voters rejected a similar pitch just a few years ago. Nick Northern takes a closer look at what's at stake.
Montana's cigarette tax could be headed for its first increase in more than 20 years. Advocates are preparing for the 2027 legislative session with a proposal to raise the tax by $2 per pack. Right now, Montana's cigarette tax sits at $1.70, a rate that hasn't changed since 2005. Supporters say the push is aimed at reducing youth tobacco use, especially as vaping and e-cigarettes have become more common in recent years. A recent poll shows that a majority of Montanans do support the tax increase, though past efforts have faced opposition at the ballot box. Advocates say they plan to continue pushing the issue in the months ahead. For the Montana State News Network, I'm Nick Northern.
Montana's future is on the line. Will you stand up and fight? Montana was built on hard work, strong families, and economic freedom. Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement, and we need you to help lead the charge. Our wages are among the lowest in the nation. Our children rank near the bottom in math and reading. Home ownership is becoming an out-of-reach dream for many, while government interference and radical regulations strangle our industries. Join us today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
Hey, this is Talk Back for Thursday. June 25th. Glad to have you along this morning, ladies and gentlemen. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. And Jonathan Granoff, president of the Global Security Institute, joining us on the phone. And Harry has been waiting quite a while for his question. So, Harry, go ahead, please, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, Jonathan, first of all, I just want to say that I agree that I think our strength is multiplied manyfold by having all our allies. But my question is this excuse we have been told why we invaded or bombing Iran is because we don't want them to have a nuclear weapon. Let me put a supposition that I've had that maybe you can point out where I'm wrong, is that I don't think Iran ever really wanted a nuclear weapon because they always were months away for I don't know how many years. They kept saying, well, they were months away, and they always use that more as the ace in a hole, a playing card, as opposed to actually having one. Since I look at North Korea, they want a nuclear weapon. They got one. They took them fairly short time, and they're fairly, you know, isolated, poor country, where Iran, they're fairly wealthy with all their oil. So I'm just, you know, maybe I'm not seeing something. You have the learned eyes, but I'm just from outside. Does it look like Iran ever really wanted to have one? They just wanted to have it as a threat. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Harry.
Well, yeah, I mean, our intelligence, you know, the U.S. intelligence community and the International Atomic Energy Agency and a lot of other eyes that have, you know, been watching Iran for years, it appears that they did have a nuclear, they had a surreptitious program to enrich nuclear materials sufficient that they could make a bomb that existed until 2002, and that was closed. You have to realize Iran is not as stable a country as the United States. There are forces in Iran that are very malignant, very war-oriented, very revolutionary, and very dangerous, that believe that it is their destiny to be the guardians of world morality, and they're perfectly willing to use weapons of mass destruction according to their own ideology. But the official position and the official practice of the country has kept them in check, and they never had a program to actually develop a bomb, but they were developing materials. They stopped that, and they've never had even the material to make a bomb. They have been producing centrifuges that can enrich uranium beyond what appears to be a rational use for civilian purposes. So one could interpret their conduct as hedging. But we had sufficient inspectors in the Iran deal that was negotiated that would have prevented them from doing that, and we could have strengthened those inspections. And we should be strengthening them. If that's the goal, that's where the negotiations should be. They will accept that, especially if we make that the norm around the world. Iran is a country in which pride and honor are highly valued. It's a society much more governed by tradition and dignity than our country. And singling them out and saying, well, the rest of the world will trust them, you know, we'll trust them a lot more, that's something that they can't tolerate. I think that what we should be doing is trusting nobody and having a much strengthened inspection regime. Let me just finish this, where I'm going with this. We know that there's going to be an expanded use of nuclear energy plants all over the world. There's going to be a need to have the International Atomic Energy Agency safeguard inspection regime strengthened. That's the mature adult way of safeguarding the world. Otherwise, we are guaranteed to have countries using that material for nefarious purposes and the rough and tumble complexity of politics around the world. The only remedy is a safeguard regime. That means strengthening the inspections globally. That's what we should be doing now. That's what adult behavior looks like. Don't let these technologies be wantonly spread without adult supervision.
We have about a minute and a half before we have to take a break. Should we get the next call? Let's get the question in from Rick. Rick, go ahead. You've been waiting a long time. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, I've been waiting a while. Yeah. If anybody didn't know you were an attorney before, they certainly know you're an attorney now. But I would like to talk about NATO. Recently, Pete Hegstead addressed NATO conference before a conference. And all of the NATO representatives sat in the back of him. And the only one other than Mark Rutte, they all sat around with like lemons in their mouths, listening to what Pete Hegstead was telling them. And Pete Hegstead was right about NATO and their lack of accountability and their lack of financial support. I think it's time that we probably either accept that NATO is not going to be an ally like Margaret Thatcher was or Tony Blair was. And as far as your negotiations go, you know, we negotiated that Russia could take Crimea.
We have 20
seconds.
Later
on, they could then later on they could walk into Ukraine. And I think your left wing thoughts of negotiation all with right. the bad actors of the world are just left wing.
All right. Thanks for the call. We're going to come right back and get Jonathan's response to that. Jonathan Gradoff, our guest on the phone. We're going to come right back. 406-721-1290 is our number. This is Talk Back. Hey, if you're waking up.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back for Thursday, June 25th, Montana World Affairs Council on the Radio episode today with Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio and our special guest on the phone. And really appreciate answering all the questions from our listeners, Jonathan Gradoff, president of the Global Security Institute. So the phone lines are free right now, but go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, actually, I want to thank our last caller because they introduced something that really allows to go into depth and a little bit more discussion about, you know, NATO. Its reasons, does it serve a benefit? Is there a cost to it that we have to eat here in the United States? Or are we missing something in terms of what the implications would be if NATO isn't here? So, Jonathan, let's talk about this a little bit since we were having a pretty robust conversation off air.
Sure. One of the benefits of NATO as it has grown is the fact that the other countries have relied on the United States military and the military industrial complex of the United States, which is quite robust. I mean, remember, our military budget is larger than the combined military budgets of Russia, China, India, Germany, Saudi Arabia, France combined. So that reliance has given us an enormous amount of influence in those countries for trade, for promoting our values. And one of the values that we've been able to promote is stopping the proliferation of nuclear weapons. If the United States were to pull out of NATO, it would be a short time before Sweden, Germany, Italy, Spain, Norway, Netherlands would likely develop their own nuclear arsenals. I don't see how that could be of benefit to the United States or the world. NATO, not only that, it's an important alliance because it was set up as a juxtaposition to the horrors of communism and as an alliance that upheld in principle the aspiration for the fundamental values that we hold so dear. Religious freedom, freedom of the press, protection of property, and democracy. Democracy is important. The accountability of government to the people, for the people, run by the people, very important. I can recall being in Russia and being asked by the Civic Chamber, the organization that licenses anything you want to do there, how do we ensure that civil society is a benefit to the security of the state? And I explained to them I couldn't help them with that, but that I could, as a lawyer, talk about how we ensure that the state is a benefit to the people, to civil society, and that in their equation, the people are the employees of the state. In our equation, the state is the employee of the people. I hold that value to be very dear, and I want to see that spread. I believe strongly in accountable government. The other point that the gentleman raised is bad actors. Bad actors can't be trusted. That's why we need the rule of law. That's why we need verification systems. That's why we need the intrusiveness of treaties. That's why we only have 9 countries with nuclear weapons in the world. That's why we don't have a spread of biological weapons. And thank God for Richard Nixon bringing us the Biological Weapons Convention. Thank God for George Bush Sr. negotiating the Chemical Weapons Convention. Thank God for Ronald Reagan for putting in motion the START process and taking the arsenals down by over 80%. This has never been a partisan issue. This is an issue of smart, dumb, immaturity, showboating, personality-driven politics, and grown-up serious politics. The reliance on the American military has been not a perfect force. We make mistakes, but because we're a democracy, we can fix them. No single person should be able to make all the policies of our country. We are a country in which diversity of opinions and debates are really important, and lawyers are necessary to protect those rights. I strongly disagree with his disparagement of the profession that I have devoted my life to. I've been to over 70 countries in this world, and I've seen what countries that don't have robust legal institutions look like. I don't want to be in those countries.
Gotcha. We're going to come right back. We have Renee waiting to visit with him when we come back. Our guest on the phone is Jonathan Granoff, president of the Global Security Institute. Great discussion so far. It's still about 18 minutes left to go. We're going to be right back with Bob Seidenschwartz from the Montana World Affairs Council as we continue right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
When are we going to get to some youth?
summer fun time.
Small businesses are the heart of America. Like you, these entrepreneurs started out with a dream and a drive to build a better life. If you have a small business idea to grow or challenge to face, you don't have to go it alone. Since 1964, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. Today, they are the nation's largest nonprofit source of expert mentoring, resources, and education. Whether you're starting out, building back, or have worked at it for years, SCORE will match you with specialized mentors. Our thousands of volunteers provide the guidance and connections you need for free. Your success is waiting. SCORE is ready to help. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Thanks to your support, the nonprofits VetTix and FirstTix have given away tens of millions of tickets and counting to vets currently serving military, the immediate family of troops killed in action, and our brave current and former first responders. These tickets are a meaningful way to say thank you to America's heroes. And now, we want you to be part of the mission. Got extra tickets to concerts, games, or special events? Or want to see if you qualify? We want you to go to VetTix.org and FirstTix.org today. Give something to those who gave.
This is Talk Back, rolling right along with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. And joining us on the phone, Jonathan Granoff, president of the Global Security Institute. And let's get right back to the phones and say good morning to Renee. Thanks for holding, ma'am. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I wasn't going to call in because it usually goes nowhere with guests like this, but I couldn't let this slide. Your guest just said that a few segments ago, that Iran has more dignity and honor than the U.S. The definition of dignity says the inherent right of every person to be valued. Iran killed 40,000 of their own citizens when they tried to protest. Do we kill 40,000 of our own citizens when we have a no kings rally? We don't even have a king. So that needs to be retracted. This is a ridiculous conversation to be having on the eve of our country's 250th birthday, when most of the other side, the left side, isn't even proud of our country. We have to have other people coming for the World Cup to tell us how wonderful our country is. This is a disgrace. God bless America.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call.
Wow. Can she stay on it? Because I didn't think that's what I said.
No, Jonathan, I don't think so. And I think it would be important. She's probably still listening. So please, in the context, of what you were saying, I had understood, and I think even if we had our resident expert, Dr. Mirdad Kia, on, he would have understood or said the cultural component, not excusing anything about their behavior, the murders, the rapes, the torture. So I just want people to take a deep breath. There's another perspective that is worth listening to.
Go ahead, Jonathan. I want to clarify this. She was listening through a prism of distortion. I was saying that in their value system of the culture,
right,
shame, honor, personal dignity are highly valued. One could say in the United States, we will see people give up the stability of their families for the value of success in business. They don't have that the way we do. It is to the point where the other side of that obsession with honor is called pride, and pride is not a great value. I would never defend the idea that the disproportionate pursuit of honor and dignity and the avoidance of shame as an end in itself is a good. We see in that country the use, violating one of the Ten Commandments, the use of invoking the grace of God for political purposes to the point where life itself
and freedom, fundamental freedoms, and the dignity of every individual is degraded, we see the dysfunctionality of that. And I couldn't agree more with her criticism. And the reason why we should celebrate the United States, where we have the value of religious freedom, and we don't have political parties based on religion. We don't have political authority based on religion. Because when you have that, it's very difficult to decide whether you're going to build a hospital or an orphanage, because God wants both of them. And you can't have a rational debate when everybody is saying, I'm representing God's word. So we have a system in which we protect people's religious liberties and rights, and our government is based on science and debate and respect for diversity. So I very much I apologize for not being clear enough on distinguishing between tyranny, religious dictatorships, and the freedom and dignity of our great country.
All right, let's get another call in before we have to take a break. Mike from Big Timber. Go ahead, Mike. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for Jonathan. Sir, you referred to America as a democracy. Are we a democracy or a representative republic?
We're both. I mean, the fundamental principle is the accountability of the government is to the people, and the methodology whereby we do that is by representative government, a Republican form of government. So ultimately, the principle is the power does not come from class, doesn't come from being wealthy, it doesn't come from being of a particular religious persuasion, and the power of the state doesn't come from God. The power comes from the people. And the method that we do that is actually quite brilliant and complex. The governing of our national elections is done by state by state. And yet that's how we create our representatives at a national level. So, yeah. So I would say that these two concepts are balanced in our system.
Okay, another question. How come Turkey is in NATO? They're nowhere close to the Atlantic.
Yeah, and how come Turkey bought their missile defense system from Russia and some of their nuclear energy plants from Russia, and we have some of our nuclear weapons stationed in Turkey, pointed at Russia. It's very incoherent, and one could hardly say that under the Erdogan regime, fundamental human rights are appropriately respected. I think that the reason is geostrategic, that we wanted to be able
Thanks
to have
for the call, sir.
There, and probably the belief that we could influence them for the good. We'll see about that.
We only have about a minute before we have to take a commercial break, and I know, Bob, you have to leave.
Just quick, actually, the caller, I hope she's still on listening, because this is exactly where we talk past each other. I understood her passion. Understood her anger. Don't accept always insults from what sometimes comes from those conversations. But yeah, Jonathan had said something that triggered that response. And yet if we now have had the opportunity to have the conversation that's ensuing, you get the perspective that in many ways, he agrees.
You bet.
Maybe she's listening and saying, maybe I'm thinking about this a little bit differently.
Yeah, and we are up against a hard break. When we come back, we have Skip waiting, and I know you have to go, Bob. But we're going to keep Jonathan on right till the bitter end of the show. And Jonathan, thank you so much for taking all these calls. And we'll continue again with Skip's question when we return. Phone number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Talk back on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders. The skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out.
We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo, we learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at PeaceCorps.gov.
Just kind of easing in to the final segment of our time on the Montana World Affairs Council with our friend Jonathan Granoff. And Jonathan, want to say thank you for taking all the calls. And we do have one more person who's waiting to visit with you. Skip, you're on with Jonathan Granoff. Go ahead, please.
Oh, and thank you, Peter. And well, my head is just swimming with things that I've heard in the last over an hour. And I just wanted to first touch on a man that called in, I believe it was from Columbus, and had a wonderful soliloquy about the Constitution. And then I want to find out who that guy is, because I want him to run for the legislature, and I got to find him. Okay. And so anyhow, you know, I'm always looking for people like that for our Montana state legislature that just got a rap on everything, I thought. Meanwhile, sir, I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, about some words that you use, so that everybody uses them once in a while, and the words are military-industrial complex. If you could explain what that is, because everybody uses it, and I'd like a definition for it. And another thing I was just curious about, for instance, democracy versus republic has been covered two or three times, so I won't go into that. I did really appreciate what Jeff had to say, because he defined a few things that he was personally involved in, and because I know he has quite a military background also. I appreciate it when he defines things. And so the other thing I wanted to ask you was, back in history a little bit, when I'll say people of your mental nature, when you say the Pledge of Allegiance and the words "under God" are in there, do you wish they were not, like they were put in 1954? Do you think that should be left out of the Pledge of Allegiance, or is that okay with you? I'll leave it at that.
Thanks for the call, Skip. So please go ahead, sir.
Well, let's go to the Pledge of Allegiance. Personally, I like it very much. Personally, I think that every beat of my heart, every breath that I take, and every breath that you take, and every heartbeat that you have comes from God. I didn't make my life. I don't make my heartbeat, I don't make my breathing. I don't make the tree that I'm looking at out the window right now. I don't make anything. God made everything. And to God we are accountable, and under God we live. I don't want the state to be telling people how to get to heaven. I don't want the state to be telling people what they should believe. I want the state to protect people to be able to find out about God themselves. It's very dangerous when the state does that. I said the Pledge of Allegiance growing up, and I'm glad that I did personally. But that's the principle, is that it shouldn't be imposed by the state, because then you end up with something very much like Iran. It's very dangerous when you have that. And in many countries where you have highly passionate religious beliefs, everybody having very fundamental different interpretations of God. India is a good example. It's a sixth of the world's population, and there's 200 languages in the country and many different religions. You can't have them fighting over their, you know, over whose definition of God is better. My definition of God is love, God is the creator, God is almighty. As to the military-industrial complex, the concept was articulated by a great president, one of our greatest presidents, Dwight D. Eisenhower. And he warned us in his speech when he was leaving office that there was too much power, too much in economic and political influence in the major corporations that produce our military hardware and the ideologies that arise. They have interests. They're corporations that are designed to make profit for the shareholders, and they don't always operate in the highest
interest of our nation, but they're very important. But let me give you an example of the benefit that they do bring. The country of India...
Got about a minute, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Let me just finish. 80% of its weaponry is Russian, and that's the spare parts. They want to be buying their military hardware from the United States, from Boeing, from Raytheon, from our military productive institutions. And by threatening them with tariffs, it ensures that they'll be buying military hardware that they don't want to from the Russians. That's not good. So there's a plus and a minus in our military industrial complex. But we are the largest military producer in the world. We are also the most, we have been the strongest advocates for fundamental human rights and freedoms. That's our greatest export. And the way that those fundamental freedoms are protected is through the law.
Jonathan,
that's what grown-ups do.
Thank you so very, very much for sharing your time with us and your expertise. We appreciate it. And thank you for being with us today, President of the Global Security Institute. And we deeply appreciate your time, sir. All right, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Friday, what's coming up, sir?
The first hour will be City Talk. We're going to talk with Adrian Beck from the Office of Emergency Management and Casey Scott from the Missoula Fire Department. Casey will talk about the importance of people refraining from shooting off personal fireworks in their backyards, which is illegal, and enjoying the public professional shows instead. Adrian's going to talk about the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which is being developed, and Ember Zones. And then from 9 to 10... we'll do open phones.
Yeah, fire season is coming up, ladies and gentlemen, and so we all need to be very, very careful. I love Adrian Beck. She's one of my favorite public employees and an official that is one of absolutely brilliant, and we love having her here in the studio or on the phone. She's a great resource. So get out there and make it a great day, everybody. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. And thanks to Bob Seiden-Schwartz and to Jonathan Granoff and to all of you calling this morning. We appreciate it. Have yourselves a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.